You're listening to Captain John Doe, real aviation stories told anonymously. Let's get into it. Hello, and welcome back to the Captain John Doe podcast, where we share weekly anonymous aviation stories right here to your brain dome. I'm Mindy.
And I am Kevin.
And Merry Christmas Eve. It's a holiday spectacular.
A spectacular Captain John Doe podcast awaits, doesn't it?
I hope you guys are up in the air and flying to go see your family or friends and do something really awesome for the holidays. And on this episode, we will be announcing our very first merch winner. As you guys know, we've had a merch drawing started a couple of weeks ago, where if you submit a review to our podcast and then just send us a message that you did it, you are added to our merch drawing.
And these shirts, by the way, are fire.
Fire.
It's not just like some, you know, t-shirt that Mindy went online and ordered. Like, these things are cotton. They're comfortable. They fit good. I think they're cotton.
No,
they're right there. I like the color.
I think it's comfort colors.
It's comfortable. It fits me good. You know, I'm bigger. Like, it's comfortable for me. Anyways, with the newest addition to the podcast where we're doing these giveaways, remember, we're doing it once a month. So it's Christmas Eve, isn't it?
Yeah, what a great time for our very first drawing. I'm so excited for you guys to start to get merch. I think one day we'll have a shop, but for right now, we want to keep it exclusive to the merch winners. We have stickers and bags and shirts. You'll get a whole package from us if you get chosen. And all you have to do, it's free to enter. You just submit your review. A lot of people are submitting on Apple Podcasts. I'd say that's where I prefer, but you can submit a review anywhere. It really helps our platform be exposed to new listeners. So please do that. Send us a message on the Captain John Doe Instagram, which you guys should be there watching anyway.
Absolutely. How many reviews are we up to now?
We're well over 100 reviews now on a brand new podcast, which, thank you guys.
You
so
guys
much.
Are crushing it.
And you know what's even crazier is we even have more submissions than that. So as important as reviews, are you guys submitting to the show? Submit your anonymous aviation stories, and it can be about anything.
But since it's Christmas, it's holiday season, we all know that this is probably the most stressful time for families traveling. I would love to read some of those stories on the podcast. Read about or write about your delays, write about something that good happened, write about the weather that you had to fly into as a passenger, as a pilot, anything.
Someone must have some sort of Home Alone-esque story, right?
Yeah.
Where they got left behind as a child.
Oh my goodness. I mean, I have one, but it's not related to Christmas. We can share that at a different time.
Oh, yeah. You got left at Disney.
I did get left at Disney.
When you were a kid.
Yeah. That's funny.
That's hilarious.
So I want to ask you this question. I know you posted something the other day on your Instagram about a Christmas wish list almost. What would be on that aviation Christmas wish list for you right now?
Okay. For me personally, or what I should tell the people to get? I guess it's too late anyway.
You.
A great Christmas wish list. I put this in the video, VIP air conditioned chalet air show tickets. You know, when I go to Sun and Fun, I want to be in the 927 lounge. Oh. I want air conditioning, snacks, and water that doesn't cost $6 a bottle. That's just free for the taking.
Okay.
Dreamy. Let's see, what else would I want? Any type of flying experiences, from aerobatic training, warbird flights, maybe some scenic area flights. You could certainly, if you want to, send me to Alaska, put me on a float plane.
Why did I ask this question?
To go, you know, see the sights, go look at some bears, go fishing. I would love to get my...
Anybody out there listening, send me a message if you got any help, if you know what I mean.
I would love to... I need my float plane rating in general. That's a great gift. You could gift me my float plane rating.
I did promise you an Alaska trip next year. So
maybe we'll next year. We'll see.
Maybe.
Yeah. Do you want me to keep going?
No. No. You're supposed to like end it with two and then say, what about yours, Kevin?
You read it. You thought I'd say like, oh, I'd love a new headset, and which is still expensive.
I want a new bag.
I'm talking about like $10,000 experiences.
Yeah. I'm going to keep mine a little simpler. I would love a fuel card from, let's say, Signature. I would love.
That's not something people purchase. Now you're just making stuff up. I would love
like a gift card.
I would love the planet Mars to be on my gift list.
All right.
Now you're just making shit up.
I would like Pluto instead of Mars. How about that?
It's not even a planet. That's really lame.
I would like an in-house mechanic.
Again, you're asking for things that aren't going to happen. I asked for, although they were a stretch, they were real things that you can type in Google and purchase for a gift.
Okay, I'll just throw it out there. I want a new G7 SR22T.
Okay, that's ridiculous, but still more valid than anything else you've asked for.
Anyways,
I thought my list was silly.
It's obvious I'm not good at gift giving, so therefore I don't even know how to ask what type of gift I want.
And I want to know what other people got.
Mm.
Maybe that leads to a story. A common gift at Christmas is Discovery Flights. And I know from our submission database that there's a lot of Discovery Flight stories. There's a lot of shit that happens on that first flight for people.
Yeah.
So maybe you gifted one or was on the receiving end of a Discovery Flight for a Christmas gift, birthday gift, whatever. I don't care.
Would you like to know about my favoritest Discovery Flight I've ever had the privilege of doing? Since we're talking about crazy stories, most Discovery Flights do go really well. We go to the Hoover Dam or the Grand Canyon, but this one happened to have three go-rounds in a row with this brand new person trying to get a Discovery Flight. And I was at the helm. That day, the wind was ripping opposite of the runway we were using, and the tower was busy, and they weren't changing the runway around. So that new student / Discovery Flight got to experience go-arounds for the first time, and we did three of them.
Oh, my God.
And finally, it wasn't until the G5 that was landing next to me on the parallel went around that the tower finally flipped it around, and we landed the headwind.
That happens so much at our home airport in Henderson that they make us land with tailwinds all the time. It's terrible. Sometimes you don't really know until you're getting on short final, and then the airplane starts acting so squirrely. And it's those final seconds before touchdown where your brain can't quite compute that the inputs you're putting in are opposite of what you should need.
Crazy.
And by the time you figured it out, you've like kind of got the plane on the ground and you're like pulling off the run. You're like, oh, it was a tailwind. That's why that was really strange.
I know most of you guys come to Vegas and just think about gambling the whole time, but next time you're here, just take a little 360 around. It is literally in a bowl surrounded by giant mountains. So the wind is variable at best. Always.
Yeah.
Always.
It's a tough place, but we are going to be doing some traveling over the holidays. We're going to be headed back to our home state, Florida, just a couple days after Christmas and staying there for the New Year's holiday. We couldn't get enough time off work to go for Christmas and New Year's, so we decided to stay put for Christmas and head home right afterwards. So we're going to be in the travel mess as well, and maybe, hopefully not, we come back with a good story for you guys, because we're going to be in the mix of it.
Yes.
With everybody else flying Peasant Airline. Just kidding. We're actually flying JetBlue. We have really great tickets.
Thank you. By the way, that was a great Christmas gift too.
You're welcome.
Anyways, as always, you guys are supporting this show. So make sure you subscribe so you don't miss an episode. Make sure you're following all the socials. Mindy is putting out so much work and effort, and these videos are awesome. And leave a review, because when you leave a review, we're going to read them. So this listener said, love Mindy and Kevin. So fun. Love hearing all the behind the scenes stuff. Perfect review. That's exactly what we're looking for. 5 stars only.
5 stars to you. And then the next one, I like their name. Their name is Positive Rate Laughs Up. And it's titled Exactly the Podcast the Industry Needs. This content is a 10 out of 10. Great learning opportunities here. 5 stars. I love seeing when people notice that it can be educational, because we definitely, the front door of the Captain John Doe podcast is not educational.
No.
The front door is entertainment. And it's meant to, I don't know, help you decompress after that really tough flight you might have had, or maybe you had a long day in flight school, or maybe you just love aviation and you're at the gym right now or in your car. It's meant just to be entertainment, easy listening. You're not trying to picture a hold on the south radial with, you know, opposite turns,
boring
5-minute legs. And there is a place for that, because I use podcasts and YouTube and stuff, content online, for learning all the time. But sometimes I just want to enjoy aviation. However, there's usually learning moments, even in these hilarious stories that we get. They're usually funny because a mistake was made, right? And so then there's an obvious learning moment of like, well, don't do what that person did. So I do love that people understand that there is an educational piece, but hopefully it doesn't feel so forced.
Absolutely. Well,
without further ado, let's do the merch drawing. All right. Drum roll, please. Oh, it's Benny.
Riz Benny.
How do I say that? Raise Benny.
Congrats. You're going to love the new shirt.
Yes, we will be reaching out to you to get a good shipping address. And for everyone else, you're still on the list to win merch. We're going to do it every single month, at least once a month in 2026. And if you're not on the list, submit a review, message us on Instagram, or you can even go to the Captain John Doe website where you would submit a story and just send it in that way. Just tell us that you submitted it and what your handle is. That way we can get in touch with you. Thanks for being a part of it, guys. And I'm ready to send this package out.
Congratulations.
Woo, let's do it again next month. Okay, and with that, we are going to get to our very first story. Go ahead, Kevin.
All right, here's the title for everybody. My balls are stuck.
Does it mean exactly what we think it means?
That's it. That's the story.
Oh.
I'm just kidding.
Is this a personal story? Is this an autobiography?
All right, we'll get into it. I was hanging around the flight school waiting for the next student to show up. One of our pits drivers walked in and offered the front seat to me. I'd only been in the airplane maybe 3 times at this point, so I wasn't very familiar with the aircraft. Anyway, we get to the practice area, and the pilot puts the intercom on, push to talk, and did a seatbelt check, which is basically rolling the airplane inverted and seeing if you fall out of your seat. My belts weren't on tight enough, so when he rolled inverted and then upright, part of my ball sack got caught in between the parachute strap and my leg. He says, okay, my belt's checked. How about yours? I pressed the thumb transmit button on the throttle and voiced, my balls are caught between the parachute belt, not realizing that the intercom button was on the front of the throttle and the radio transmit key was the thumb.
Oh, no.
We were still on LVK's tower frequency, so ATC responded. Whoever needs adjustment, you're on 118.1. We had a laugh, and then I unwinched my balls and did some aerobatics.
It was funny enough before the frequency.
That's perfect. Perfect. There's so many stuck mic moments like this.
This
like,
one of the best.
This is great. Fantastic job.
I hope it wasn't a really high-pitched voice, too.
By the way, if this ever happens to you, just...
You have a tip?
Let it go. As a controller, this happened daily.
Oh, I thought you meant if
the ball's getting stuck.
Yes, thank you.
Tip for that.
I thought you were giving a tip for that.
No, I don't have a great tip on that outside of maybe wear some different type of undies or something.
No, you just... As mentioned, you just have to make sure the seatbelt's tight enough and on your waist. That way you don't get shifted around in your seat when you go upside down.
Anyways, when you guys decide to tell the tower controller your balls are stuck and everybody heard it, just know everybody did hear it. And yeah, you're embarrassed and just let it go.
Oh, that's hilarious. I have a feeling that this person wasn't embarrassed.
No, they were probably more concerned about what was going on down there.
That's hilarious. Well, perfect. Can't say that's ever happened to me. I have no tips.
Oh, okay.
That's really funny.
That's perfect.
Okay. Kevin, have you ever done aerobatics?
I don't even
know.
Not like... I didn't like go seek it out, I guess, but a couple of our friends back in Georgia had some aerobatic planes that we did a couple gentle rolls in.
Oh, really. T-34s.
And a P-51. Remember you got that for my birthday?
Yes, I do now. Okay. Yes.
So I would say...
I'm going to lay that out there. Now you got to have a story time that we're going to brag for a second, guys.
Well...
Me and Kevin both got to fly in... And fly, it was a dual control P-51 Mustang.
Yeah, that was pretty sweet. Mindy, as we all know, is an awesome wife and surprised me with a gift on my birthday to go up in the P-51. And it was...
Hold on. Stop the tapes. You asked me freaking 10 minutes ago what a good Christmas present would be. And when I said, I don't know, a Warbird flight, you said that was asinine. And you said, you're asking for way too much. This is crazy list. And now you just said what out loud? Say that again.
That Mindy may have gotten me a Warbird flight and probably the coolest one in the world.
In a P-51? Uh-huh.
And it wasn't a 10-minute flight, by the way.
Okay. What a hypocrite. Continue.
Anyways,
that's
listen.
Funny.
I married the right person.
And
sue
I
me.
Didn't.
Sue me. I'm so sorry that you're awesome and give your husband a P-51 flight.
Just
sue me. Anyways, I get to go rip in it. But the funny thing is, I think that we all got to laugh, is the flight suit that you guys made me go into was made for a toddler. I'm not a toddler. You talk about your balls getting stuck. They were not in my body anymore.
That's the perfect follow-up story to this, because you were pretty tight down there.
It was beyond tight. I didn't get to breathe for the 30 or 40 minutes we were up flying. But yeah, now I remember I did a little bit of aerobatics in a P-51 Mustang. Sorry about it.
Yes. Okay. I'm going to tell a very quick story about that will infuriate the listeners.
Oh.
Because I was infuriated. I know they're going to share my emotion. I'm going on this once in a lifetime P-51 flight. Shout out to our friend Ryan, who made that happen and was the pilot for this. At the time, me and Kevin were living at a grass strip in Georgia, an air park. Which means all the homes all the homes on both sides of this runway are all hangar homes. And so everyone has airplanes, they're pilots. Well, this particular air park we lived in was a very old, sleepy air park. And when we moved in, we really disrupt the quietness. I thought that they would love seeing some young blood move in that was flying all the time. We had airplanes coming in all the time to see us, like friends flying in, and the air park turned busy because of our sphere
presence.
Of influence. Yes, we would fly a lot. People would come in all the time. There were some complaints about that, which already kind of ticked me off. Like, you cannot live in an air park and complain about airplanes, period. I understand that people age out of flying. Maybe they become grouchy against that because they're spiteful, or maybe they're just tired of it because they've been around it for so long. That is your cue to move. That is not my problem.
Real quick, too. This is only daytime flying, by the way.
Yeah, there's
just
no lights.
Throw that in there too.
Yeah, it's never past sunset. There was no lights at the airpark. So it's not like people are taking off at 11 p.m. Yeah.
Or super early.
Great point. So anywho's, I'm on this P-51 flight, and we come in and we do a low pass.
Inspection pass.
An inspection pass over the grass strip. We didn't even get below treetops, to be fair. Like, we weren't super low. But we came, we whistled through, made all our calls, whatever, go back. That evening, we went to our neighbor's home. On Friday nights, one of our cooler neighbors would have little open bar hangar hangouts. So around 7, 8 p.m., people would just kind of gather there in the neighborhood to go have a beer. So we were there, and I didn't get to tell any of the neighbors yet that we flew in the P-51 that day. And this old lady that we lived next to, her and her husband were old. They didn't fly anymore. They were kind of older, grouchy, but they lived in a hangar home with an airplane in it that they didn't fly, but they are aircraft owners. She goes on and on about how this airplane buzzed the strip today and made a lot of noise. Granted, we did it one time, just once. And so she's going on, and like, I'm just like starting to grin because I'm like, oh, she's talking about me. Like, it's about to be my time to be like, yeah. So I look at everybody. I was like, guys, did you see that the plane she's talking about was a P-51 Mustang? And they're like, what? That's crazy. And I still didn't tell them at this time that I was in the plane. And so I just kind of let it simmer. I was like, yeah, that was me and my buddy Ryan. They're like, no way. And everyone's all excited and high-fiving me. And then she looks at me with the grouchiest frown and says, do you know that you woke? I'm going to say his name was Bob. It wasn't. You woke Bob up from his nap today? And she was serious. And I was like, oh, yeah, I'm sorry. We created a little bit of noise with a P-51 Mustang. And she was genuinely mad and started to ream me out about making noise at the airpark and that we disturbed her husband during his afternoon nap. I shit you not, she was serious as a heart attack.
Dead serious.
It wasn't a funny.
It was asinine.
You literally pulled me out of the hangar and walked me home. You saw me, my blood was boiling.
Because you didn't even do anything crazy. Like you said, you didn't get below the treetops. We had about 100-foot high trees surrounding the air park. So like they weren't even low.
She was just upset about the noise.
You flew directly over the house. Well, the house is on the runway. So
Yeah.
Anyways, long story short though, Mindy got me a P-51 ride for my birthday.
Booyah.
All right. Share your story.
Okay. On last week's episode, everybody really loved, especially on social media, the Am I the Asshole thread from Reddit. That's always really popular. And I have another one that I want to read. The title's Am I the Asshole for Not Supporting Husband's Dream of Becoming a Pilot.
Asshole.
It's interesting. I always want to say what the commenters have tagged it, but remind me to say it at the end because I think last time I forgot. And on the last episode, it was about this lady's friend that wanted to use her jets that she managed for free for a birthday party. Obviously, that lady who said no was not the asshole. But, okay. My husband is 38 and I am 30. We married 5 years ago, no children. Throughout his life, he has worked management positions in fast food restaurants with the occasional retail job. With his salary plus mine, we live semi-comfortably. There hasn't ever been a lot of extra cash, but the bills are paid and the groceries are in the pantry. His jobs have burnt him out over the years, and I feel he's given up trying at work. I fear his lack of performance might land him out of a job. We have a small, charming little community college just 20 minutes from our home that I told him to look into. They have a range of classes and programs I thought he could dabble in for cheap. He could find something that he actually enjoyed. Now, when I did this, I meant a cheap class with a certificate or a technical diploma. In the end, not a 2 to 4 year degree that we cannot afford. That's, however, what he decided. He mentioned in the past about wanting to attend flight school, but he felt he was too old. When I told him to look into the school, he was under the impression I meant to go with any program, despite the cost or the amount of time that he'd have to put into it. He met with the flight instructors and applied that same day. It's led to an argument so bad that I am typing this from a hotel room with thoughts on the bar of the first floor. I love my husband and I love the excitement he showed when he told me about the aviation stuff, but I told him we need to face reality. We don't have the money. It's $75,000 and he doesn't even have the time. He talked about budgeting, taking out loans, financial aid, etc. But when I wouldn't budge, he claimed that I was unsupportive and deceptive. Am I the asshole?
Yes.
Oh.
100%. People who are going to chime into this have never flown in a plane. I understand her point of view. It's a real point of view and it's logical. But I also see firsthand every day when somebody shows up and takes their first flight.
Right.
And it's impossible to shy somebody away from that, regardless of cost. So I get her point of view, but I also get that he's never going to accept that point of view. And here's the reality. When you have something like that in your life, something that you find that drives you and motivates you, that $75,000 will be found. That's a reality. And that's for anyone listening out here that's going through training. I understand the cost. I paid for every single cent for my training with, obviously, the help of my beautiful wife. But we paid for it all. And it wasn't easy. But here's the thing. When you come up with this in your mind to change your life and to move in a direction that you want to be, you're going to figure it out. And I understand the reality of money. I do. We understand that. But this job that we're in, this hobby that we're in, that everyone here is listening to, also understands how impossible it is to look the other way.
It is. I mean, this is a really tough topic, I feel like, because me and you are so passionate about the chase your dreams mantra. We have both done that in several different ways in our lives. Obviously, with you being a prior air traffic controller, changing to be a pilot was a huge cost involved. And even for us, we are similar age with no kids as this person writing in. We're in a different financial situation with my career and the career that you had, and it was still hard.
Yes.
So that's, I hate to say that I see both sides.
No, I said that. I get both sides. But my point is the husband's point of view. There's no way that he's going to accept the reality coming from his wife if he's been miserable in his career.
But like, here's the reality. If he's going to go to school full time, which is the cheapest, most efficient way to do it, he's not only spending money during that time paying for flight school, he's also not generating the income that he has been generating. So it's a double whammy to go back to school full time for anything, not just aviation. You're losing income and increasing your debt at the same time,
yeah,
which is really tough for a lot of households.
Really tough.
Because even if you take out loans for school, how does this couple make up the gap, the financial gap, if they were depending a lot on his income contributions? If he's not contributing to putting groceries in the pantry anymore, it's just not a reality for everyone. And maybe there's a way to make it work, not tomorrow, but maybe there's a way to put a plan in place over the next year or 5 years or whatever, that you create this plan to be able to take off work to do it for the year of flight school or something like that. But to say that anyone can just drop anything and do it tomorrow is probably not a reality.
It's not. I understand that.
Which is a really tough pill to swallow, because I'm very much in the YOLO camp. You know, you only live once. You got to do your thing. I'm very much supportive of that. But everyone's situation is so different.
Great topic.
You called her an asshole. I will tell you that Reddit called her not the asshole.
Well, obviously, because she's not being an asshole. Like, she's not. She's being pragmatic.
I'm going to read a couple comments real quick. One of the top comments says, nah, he's being super impractical. And at the same time, if I'm trying to see his side of this, he is burnt out and I empathize with how hopeless that can feel. Then he found this one thing that got him excited and you shit on it from his perspective.
Yeah, that's what
and
I said.
Yet his plan is crazy. It's a declining industry. Pilots aren't treated like they were decades ago with a mandatory retirement age of 65 for airline pilots. You can't and shouldn't play into his fantasies. This is a tough one because you should express your support for him, but you also have to rein him in and get him to figure out something more practical. it take him the rest of his career to pay off the training costs.
I don't agree with that, but a lot of it is true. This is hard for me because this is me.
Like, I know. We're in this situation.
You know, the difference is we were fortunate to have my career and your career to not have to take out a loan. But I did this exact thing.
Next person says, not the asshole. 75K is the tip of the iceberg. Flight time, books, instructors, all of this costs plus. Investigate the salaries of beginning pilots and you'll see why they make less than a middle manager. Until you get seniority, you're doing short jumps that don't pay since you're only paid for when you push away from the gate till you get to your next gate. Do some research and he might see it's not viable for a career this late in life.
All right, I'm going to keep playing devil's advocate.
Let me also say that this comment was a couple of years ago.
I was going to say, this is not...
There's new contracts now where this is different, but... If this husband years ago when this post was made had made the jump into it, he would be enjoying all these new contract pay jumps and they would be swimming in it.
Let's just be honest with the listeners. So we literally had this chat the other day about me and recouping the salary that I had as an air traffic controller. So I left in March and I'm instructing right now. For everyone that knows, CFIs don't make great money. Okay, but you're working towards that next job. That next job can be a wide, wide range of things from a 91 job, which is flying a private jet for a family, a 135 job, which is flying private jets for a charter company like NetJets or a regional or X, Y, and Z. The salaries of those jobs have jumped exponentially to nearly six figures to starting year one. Mm-hmm. Back to the original point I'm making is from March when I left of 2025, I'm making a general assumption based on my current path with hopeful job offers that in about 3 years total time, I will be able to recoup the money, not recoup, get back to the salary that I was at as a controller at a level 12 facility.
From, you mean March 2025 to March 2028?
Correct.
As your projection?
I think that by that time, I will be making the same amount of money that I was making as the highest paid air traffic controller.
And then the cool thing about the pilot side is that your salary is going to continue to grow beyond that break-even point. And just keep growing and growing as you get seniority.
Mm-hmm.
So even the wages lost over those 3 years, getting back to that same number are going to be regenerated and then some and then some and then some.
Yeah. I don't want to make this all, you know, sunshine and roses because this is hard. And the quality of life was really what I was seeking out. The change from air traffic to being the pilot, but you don't get that quality of life like these people said for a long time. So that right. still might not even be the thing in 3 years.
We still don't have that yet.
Yeah, we might, like we, our quality of life right now is starting to become very similar just because of the amount of work I'm doing, which is on purpose, right?
Right. You're only taking a day off every 2 to 3 weeks.
Correct.
So it very much feels to me like controller wife life again lately,
yeah.
Which kind of sucks. But the difference on why I can hold on during this period is when you were a controller, there was no end in sight. Like I knew that I would spend every holiday alone and I knew I'd spend every Saturday and Sunday alone. But in this phase of life, I know that it's temporary. And so temporary, like we're a couple months away from big changes.
Cross our fingers, people.
Yeah.
Cross our fingers.
Pray for me.
Let's hope.
Pray for me.
Because going from one day off, because as a controller, I had 4 days off a month. Right now, I'm taking, I don't know.
How you many get days your off. 8 days, but it's not 2 days off a week.
Correct.
Because if we have any thing that we need to accomplish as a couple, for example, attending a family member's wedding or anything that we must travel for, and it's 3 to 4 days immediately taken off of your 8 days in one little hiccup.
Yeah.
Which means a lot of the months, like we do have stuff going on that we need to do stuff like that for. So it's usually you take off 1 to 2 days every 2 to 3 weeks.
Correct.
To save up those days to go towards the things that we have to go do.
Yeah, it's a little bit a unique situation. I do get days off. Okay, so are you guys listening? But I make the choice to stack the days. Whereas when I get my regional job, I'm only going to work 15 days a month.
Oh my gosh, that's going to be
I know I'm going to commute, but like even then, how does 10 days off a month sound? I've never had that in my life. Like, because I get that a lot from my friends because I'm probably going to be a commuter and I'm sure I'll get messages and everything. But just remember, I had 4 days off a month for a decade. So even with commuting, having, let's say, 8 to 10 days off, like hard off, is incredible. So anyways, I know we're getting long-winded here. I think we're passionate about this topic because I'm literally this guy who was unhappy with my career, not career choices. I love my career with quality of life and made a change, but we can't ignore the elephant in the room. I couldn't have done this without you, period.
Aviation's tough, and it's also tough on your spouses. So remember to give them extra love. For the last, 8-10 years, and now probably again this year, I will be sitting at home alone on Christmas Day. And that's the reality of being in a partnership with someone in aviation. Mm-hmm. And that's not going to go away anytime soon. No. When you're a regional.
That'll never go away.
When you have seniority. I know plenty of airline pilots that are our age that are not working on Christmas.
That's exciting. I've never had Christmas off
before. You had Christmas off once because it fell on a Thursday or a Wednesday was your day off, but they scheduled you for overtime and you still had to call out sick.
That's funny.
Anyways, if you guys are going through a career change in your 30s, 40s, 50s, we feel for you. It's really tough, but just keep your eyes on the prize. Everything is temporary, right? Nothing has to be permanent in this life. So chase your dreams. You guys know where we stand on this topic, even though this post was posted on a part of the internet that was not aviation specific, which is why the comments all say like, that's crazy, blah, blah, blah. Aviation people, aviators of all types are different breeds of people. We all think differently. We all think strategically. We can all see future and long term. So I don't think that it's a surprise that we disagree with the general public, with Gen Pop, as we call them.
And I truly just want people to do what makes them happy, because I know that that's how we live our life.
Well, speaking of becoming a pilot, this episode is supported in part by Airplane Academy Private Pilot Flashcards. Our friend Charlie, he is a YouTuber. You might know him. It's Airplane Academy on YouTube and Instagram. I've filmed him with him before. He's a great guy. And he made these really awesome private pilot flashcards. They're color-coded by different categories. So if you're learning to fly, it could be a really useful tool. And it's also really useful for flight instructors. Me and Kevin both use them for flight reviews, both to study on our own and to quiz students. Over 5,000 have been sold with a nearly perfect 5-star review. They are perfect for preparing for your written, check ride, flight reviews, or just getting back in the aviation space. Maybe you're a rusty pilot. This would be great for you. Head to airplaneacademy.com/John Doe.
All right, let's get into the last story. This is a longer one, and I...
Ooh, I'm buckled in. Tight, like a long my waist.
I think we've told you this. We're reading every story.
You missed my joke.
I did. You were talking about my balls getting stuck again?
Yeah.
That's not how a joke went. All right, I'm buckled in tight. We're going upside down?
I don't know. You tell me. I don't know this story.
All right, the title's Near Death.
Oh, gosh. Okay.
All right. It was a couple seconds from death on a Air Force C-17. I'm not a pilot. I was an operations intelligence specialist in the United States Air Force in the early 2000s in a KC-135 unit. That's a career field that would give the air crew their intel briefs before sorties. Sorties, by the way, are just practice sessions for those that don't know what that word is. One of the things we would brief is to remind them of various countermeasures to use against different threats. I was in a cargo unit, so one of my training schools was the intel portion of the low-level tactics course, where air crew learn to use terrain as countermeasures. Since we're talking cargo units, airplanes here, there was opportunity for us intel students to be on the airplane during the flying portion of the training for the aircraft crew if we wanted to go. So basically, on board would be the normal air crew of a particular airplane, a pilot instructor from the low-level school, and a passenger, like me, from the school. I don't remember all the planes in this particular class available, but there were C-17s and an Italian Air Force C-130 for sure. I should also, at this time, point out I got motion sick pretty easily. Boats on the lake for more than 10 minutes, yep, I got motion sickness. Riding in the backseat of a car for a half hour or more, yep.
Me too.
Flying in turbulence, yeah. This is a known thing, so I kept myself out of those situations. I started this two-week course and didn't volunteer for any of the flights. All my classmates did. And of course, they all came back and said how awesome it was. So on the last day, they had a C-17 going up, and I said, sure, why not? How often can a person say they've been flying through the Arizona mountains low level on a C-17? Sounds pretty sweet, by the way. So I went for it. So there we were, a C-17 in the Arizona mountains, while you look out the window and look up at the mountaintops. So we're not just flying like a little above the mountains, we're in the mountains. And they let me be in the crew compartment. So we have aircraft commander in the left seat, pilot in the right. Sorry.
You were doing so good. You were on a roll there.
Oh my gosh.
Where'd that come from?
Whoa. I think something just flew in my mouth.
What?
All right. Let's keep going. Sorry about that. So we have the aircraft commander in the left seat, pilot in the right seat, instructor pilot in jump seat. And if I remember correctly, flight engineer or loadmaster seats several feet behind the aircraft or the AC. That's not right.
Aircraft commander.
Aircraft commander.
Sorry. They put AC, which is usually aircraft for us.
Behind the commander, let's say that.
Okay.
And for me to be in there, I had to stand behind the instructor pilot with feet spread wide and arms grasping for the headrests and the wall. Whatever I could to stabilize myself. I had a headset on and I'm listening to all crew communications. And us intel guys were explicitly told not to interfere with crew comms. We're just there to observe and look pretty. This is a C-17, remember? Not a fighter. So we're not exactly executing snap rolls and precision crispness you would might envision like a fighter. It's one of those where control wheel is turned, and 3 seconds later, the plane executes it. So anyways, amazingly, we're doing all this yanking and banking, and I'm doing pretty good. No motion sickness. I'm just enjoying the show. The school shoots up from the ground what they call Smoky Sams, showing a smoke trail so the pilots can get a sense of realness of what the smoke trail of a Sam might look like coming for them and all that. The crew is calling out visuals and executing countermeasures. Cool stuff, I'm thinking. And then we're in a left bank and the Smoky Sam smoke trail is on the right. So aircraft banking left, both pilots craning their necks, looking out the right window, looking for the smoke, and we're turning. And I hear a call out in my headset of terrain. In my head, I was like, what? A few seconds go by, and the instructor pilot calls out terrain, again in his normal voice. I think, okay, that's what I thought I heard. I look at both pilots, and they're still looking out to the right window. I look out the left, and we're in a left turn. I see the ground and more of it quickly rising up in the distance. Now, like I said, this is a C-17, not a nimble beast. I look back and the pilots are still looking out the right window. Instructor pilot a third time, terrain, with a lot more urgency to his voice. And the pilots are still looking out the right window. At this point, I'm thinking, well, this is how it ends. It's been a nice some 30 years and I've had a lot of fun. But I die on an airplane ride with these two chuckleheads. I was against it in the first place, but said, what the hell? Serves me right. I should have stuck to my guns. Instructor pilot. Terrain, knock it off. With as much urgency as one could muster without yelling and losing professional military bearing. The pilots look back to the controls, and I see the pilot look to the left and see his eyes get the oh shit look. They pulled out of it with, I would guesstimate, 5 seconds to spare, which I guess in a C-17, time is eons. So all is good. Instructor pilot says, and that's why we practice, gentlemen. They do a circle and come back to where they left off to start again. This is why pilots are always reminded to their job is to fly the airplane. No matter what is going on and whatever else requires your attention, fly the airplane. I said, fuck that. Dropped comms and went and sat in the cargo area. I figured if I'm going to die, I don't want to see it coming. And I guess all the action kept my mind focused because about 5 seconds after my ass hit the side of the seat in the cargo area, I'm white as a ghost and throwing up on the rest of the flight. The loadmaster's laughing his ass off and gives me the garbage can. Severely dehydrated all the next day. Worse than any hangar I've ever had. Both the best and most horrible airplane flight to date.
Oh my gosh. First of all, I agree with going on the flight because flying low level in a C-17 through the mountains sounds so fun.
Yeah.
But how was the instructor pilot not literally smacking them against the head?
The amount of like patience that guy has is incredible. Obviously, senior vet, seen a couple things, but a C-17, I can't even fathom, you know, the delay. That's what I'm looking at. Like the delay of what this guy's describing of pulling the stick back on a plane that large definitely takes forever to happen. So,
and for the instructor pilot at the end, his only comment to say, oh, and that's why we practice,
gentlemen.
Man, his balls must have been strapped down tight too.
They were not there no more.
God. We've heard a lot about instructors lately that have really kept their cool way longer than I ever could, so I don't know if that's a kudos or a reality check for these instructors.
I think that's like a very fine line. I literally had this talk with one of our new instructors yesterday. It's funny because I was sitting holding short while I was watching him do some pattern work. And after the flight, I went up to him and I kind of was asking how the flight went. And he's like, man, it was a little hairy and everything. And I was like, yeah, I was watching it. And I actually said, your balls seem pretty large right there, buddy. You might want to strap them back in.
Coming up like so
it's
much.
Funny because, you know, this is one of our new guys. And I'm like, ooh, maybe let it go a little less than that at first.
Yeah,
you never know.
You're right. It is a fine line on how much you let your student go and get to push the envelope.
Yeah. For those instructors out there, you guys know. What's too far?
I'm just not cut out for it anymore. I don't think I am such a safe Sally now. I think as an early instructor, I'd be like, yeah, let's do that.
Is that how you were to me?
Let's restart the plane at 200 feet like the Bonanza guy. Oh, but I just can't. I can't.
You train me. I know how you train me. And there's no funny business with you. Like, it is straight as an arrow.
I train for prevention, though.
Absolutely. More than anyone I've ever trained with is, like, the entire training flight is, where am I landing this airplane?
I'm always pointing out risks because the last thing I want is a student of mine or someone who's learned from me to not have thought of scenario XYZ. And it's not out of paranoia. It's just out of... if this happens to you, like, I don't want that to be your first introduction is when it's happening in real life, real time. This should have been a thought at some point during training. And obviously we can't go through every single scenario, but we can go through quite a few of them.
Yeah.
And I'm always training for prevention of like, oh, like what you did was safe and fine. However, if you were to make this one little misstep, XYZ would happen and you'd be in a bad situation. So I recommend you do it this way. Like, that's always what I'm trying to do, is just see down the line.
I was going to say, I'd say what you did better than anyone I've ever had teach me, and it helps me even more as an instructor, of staying not a few steps ahead. Every instructor you have, every good instructor, is going to preach you stay ahead of the airplane. But Mindy did not have me stay ahead of the airplane. We had to be in a different warp tunnel of that airplane. We were in a wormhole of how far ahead of what was about to happen to us.
I just cannot stand reactionary actions by pilots. I cannot stand it.
Like, we're talking about, like, we're doing a cross country with a crosswind 3 hours down the road, briefing how we're going to come in and land.
I just, you know? I cannot stand a pilot who reacts to things happening to them that has no foresight of prevention. Obviously, you cannot prevent everything, but if you want to avoid the old Swiss cheese model, you've got to start with prevention.
Don't let those dominoes start falling on you.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Maybe I sound lame, but I really don't care because I'm still sitting here.
I mean, there's no lame there. I was one of the very few that got to learn from you. And I know I'm your husband, but there's literally no one better. And I
take it very seriously.
I think that it's impacted me exponentially to the point where I quit my job.
You know? Yeah, I really fudged up there. I influenced you too hard, and then all of a sudden you were quitting your job, and I'm like, excuse me?
We were ahead of the wormhole.
Yeah. Back to this story, I was thinking when he said that he was going to be standing the whole flight, I thought surely that's a way to get sick quicker. I thought that's where the story was going, was that he was going to be so sick, especially because he was standing there, and maybe he puked on the controls or the pilots in front of him. The way he was positioned in the cockpit.
Sure.
But it sounds like standing helped him Maybe. Not get sick. And he didn't get sick till he sat down. But also he was looking forward through the windshield.
Yeah, he's up front. That's probably the saving grace. Because going in the back is the worst thing you can
That's
do.
True. Well, especially, I don't know if he's looking out the window back there.
Probably
it doesn't
not.
Really matter. But because, you know, when you're on boats and you get seasick, they say the best way to get through it is to get in the water.
Yes.
Because all, like, the motion gets taken away. And a lot of motion sickness comes from visual cues, like your eyes. So I think being able to look out on the horizon from
Correct.
The front really helps. I shared this tip on my social media about there's a iPhone hack that you guys might not know about. So I do get really motion sick. I don't know if we've talked about this.
Not on the pod.
I get motion sick in the back of cars, and I have to Uber a lot for the nature of my job. I'm traveling, I have to Uber places. And if I'm sitting in the back seat of a car, I cannot look at my phone. If I open my email, Instagram, whatever, I'm going to get so nauseous. But a little hack for you guys, if you guys go on your iPhone in the settings, and maybe other phone brands have it too, but I just know iPhone, go to accessibility, and then under motion, there is something called vehicle motion cues. Mine is on automatic. So anytime I'm in a moving vehicle, there's these little dots that go around the perimeter of my phone screen. And as the vehicle moves, the dots do too. And it really helps your visual cues as you're sitting in the back of a car or something. So like if the car's turning left, all the dots shift left with the rate of turn of the car.
I know. The first time I saw your phone, I didn't know what was wrong. I thought there was a bunch of ants on it or something.
It solved my motion sickness of looking at phones. Like, I still can't look at it for an extended period of time, but I can do emails. I can scroll for a bit. I can at least pull up a podcast. Before, I could not look at my screen for a second. So that's a little iPhone hack for you people who also get motion sick in cars. But hey, has anyone ever gotten sick with you in the airplane yet?
Yes, but they held it in. I've had a couple.
Has anyone ever, so no one's ever thrown up in the plane with you?
Not with me. I've usually hoped that they're vocal with me. And anytime it happens, if we're in the Skyhawk or something, we'll pop the window open, have them look outside.
Yeah.
In the Cirrus, no, I have not. But it's mostly in the Skyhawk where they start feeling it coming. But we have sick bags always.
Yeah, we have them in our airplane too. But I knock on wood, I've never been sick in a plane, and I have never seen anyone get sick in a plane. I've heard a lot of stories. Like one of the most iconic stories on Captain John Doe of the husband and wife
yeah.
who threw up on landing. You said what?
Iconic.
Oh.
It's probably a greaser too.
Probably so. The most high pressure situations create the best performance.
What do they say? Pressure makes diamonds?
Ah, I didn't even think about that. Yes.
On that note.
So on that note, I'm also surprised the C-17, am I surprised that the C-17 doesn't have terrain awareness?
It's just the instructor pilot, terrain.
Yeah, I thought when you first said terrain that it was the system saying.
Well, that's why I read it like that too.
Yeah, you wrote it, you said it.
I read it wrong.
In the robot voice, terrain. Pull up.
No, but it's just the instructor going, I just hear it now. Terrain. Stop it.
Yeah. Yeah, this is an official notice to the Air Force that you guys need to put in terrain awareness into your aircraft. Please. Because remember, there's a lot of noteworthy accidents that have happened because of this exact thing. Like the pilots that got fixated on a light bulb in the cockpit. You remember that? The light bulb, I forget, it like wasn't coming on or it was stuck on. I think it wasn't coming on. It was literally a burnt out bulb in the light in the cockpit on one of the things. And they got so fixated on it, just staring at this light bulb, that they crashed into terrain.
Mm.
CFIT.
Yeah.
Controlled flight into terrain. Mm. And it's happened many times. People, when pilots get distracted, you know.
Distractions are everything.
Yeah. So they're lucky that the instructor pilot was not also looking out the right window. Mm. I mean, especially because it sounds like this guy who wrote the story didn't notice it until the last second either. So that's pretty crazy.
Well, thank you for writing that in. Really like that. And I love that you are not a pilot and took the time to write this in. This is also what we're looking for. Is we want everybody. Any story you guys can think of, send it in and we're going to read it.
Yeah, this was an engineer, right?
Intel officer.
Intelligence specialist. Ah. Awesome. Well, thank you guys, as always, for writing in and sharing and listening to us yap for the last however long. Hope you guys have a very safe holiday season and get to spend some off time, which I'm sure is much deserved for everyone, with your friends and family, and enjoy the holiday season.
See you guys. We look forward to reading your next stories.
See you in 2026. See you next year.
Thanks for flying with Captain John Doe. If you have a story to share, visit CaptainJohnDoe.com and stay anonymous. New episodes every Wednesday. Be sure to subscribe, leave a review, and tell your favorite crew members.